Ah, the old Gamera gong. Yes, how it shines and it beckons us monster lovers to emerge from the shadows and give it a whack. Yes, as I lift this mallet, I am overcome with memories from the past. My silent movie reviews from season 4, when I overcame a murderous little rat named Pierre. I wonder where he is these days. Yes, well, anyways, season 5, in which I suffered an existential crisis. Yes, the only answer now is to beat the gong and press ahead with the Poverty Row picture show. Welcome to Camp Kaiju Monster Movie Podcast. I am your host, Peter Laurie, and we're talking about all of my favorite monster movies. The good, the bad, and the downright campy. And asking if they stand the test of time.
Oh, Mr. Laurie, what are you doing?
It's the middle of the night. Vincent, hello.
I have a kid sleeping in the next room.
Oh, sorry. Vincent, hello. I do not sleep. I am the reanimated corpse of Hollywood horror legend Peter Lorre, after all, and you may remember me from such films as...
No, I know who you are. It's just... Well, I guess I didn't expect you to see you back so soon. How was the honeymoon?
Oh, fabulous. Have you ever made love to a bird lady?
God, no. What?
Lenore is my soulmate. This, I am certain. And as we slept in and watched all my old movies... She helped me realize that I could be doing more on Camp Kaiju.
Well, you host a terrific segment. Everyone loves it. Sean Pryor told me so, and Kaiju Nick wrote in. Hey, even Matt appreciates you in his own ways.
Do not mention that rat bastard in my presence again.
Oh, sorry. Yikes. Old wounds. Mr. Laurie, I'm happy to help you out. What do you need?
I think I need to get back to basics. Yes, in my bones, I feel that the Poverty Row picture show should focus more on the Poverty Row films themselves. I mean, looking back on season 5, I battled a giant murderous plant and read the entirety of Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven. I mean, I was not in a good place. My point is, with season 6... I'd like to talk more about the classic horror B-movies themselves, you know, really, really focus on the production, the release, and the legacy of these classic horror films.
Yeah, okay, we can do that.
Oh, really? Yes, you think it is possible?
I'm the one who's got to edit this stuff. I love your idea, Mr. Laurie.
Hot dog, we're back in business.
I'm glad you're feeling rested and ready to go. We've still got that Shemp Howard picture called Crazy Nights to review. It's about 3 guys who run afoul of ghosts, a gorilla, and a haunted house.
Oh, it sounds absolutely terrible. I cannot wait. When do we get started?
We'll include it in the first episode of 2026, Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla 2.
Wonderful.
Hey, wait, where are you going?
Well, I need to tell you that I have also moved in with Lenore. Yes, my bachelor days are over. Old Peter Lorre here is coming home to roost, and I'll send you my recordings via carrier pigeon.
All right, I mean, I support you, Mr. Lorre. I thought maybe, it sounds silly, but I thought maybe we could hit the Gamera gong together. Just to show you there's no hard feelings, I'll let you do the intro.
I can do that much.
All right, on the count of 3.
Ready.
1, 2, 3.
Welcome to Camp Kaiju Monster Movie Podcast. I am your host, Peter Laurie, and we're talking about all of our favorite monster movies. Yes, the good, the bad, and the downright campy. And asking if they stand the test of time. Traditional kaiju creature features, space invaders, the supernatural, and everything in between. All strange beasts welcome here.
Thank you. Yeah, this is Peter Lorre speaking.
I couldn't resist the temptation to call you. I just read of your new picture that you're to make.
Oh, that's very nice of you. Thanks for your interest.
Oh, I thought you were magnificent in M.
And just the other night I saw your new picture, The Man Who Knew Too Much.
What character are you going to play in?
Oh, it's the most unusual story. You know, it's a great love drama. I am to be a half-mad scientist. I, a poor peasant, have conquered science. Why can't I conquer love? He shall be shut up when it's I who am mad. But nobody knows that. Yes, each man kills the thing he loves.
Well, I gotta tell you about Peter Lorre here. He is reviewing a movie, a Golden Age ape movie starring Bela Lugosi called The Ape Man from 1943. Mr. Lugosi plays a scientist who, through some sort of science gone awry, injects himself with an ape serum and turns into an ape man.
Whoa. That sounds great.
It's perfect for Congo, lined up perfectly.
Yeah.
Thank Mr. Lorre for that work. I know he is in a bit of a jam dealing with this lilac. My mental connection, my telepathic connection is beeping danger signals right now. Can you do anything to help him? Can you get into that room? Is it still locked?
It is still locked, yeah. I mean, I can do something to help him. Do I want to? That's another question. I don't know. But I feel I can already see like the petals and like the tendrils of the lilac like creeping under the door. So I'm a little freaked out. I don't know if I want to go in there right now. But, you know, I don't need a telepathic connection to know that he's in danger. So I might check on him after this episode just to make sure.
Okay. Okay. We'll check back next time. To see how he's doing, how you're doing. The world might be in danger. You're next, everybody. You're next.
Yeah. Look out for that lilac. Yeah. While I'm in there, I'll ask Mr. Lorre if he has any thoughts about why there are so many monkey movies in the 1990s. He probably has some thoughts on that.
Might have. Yeah, he might have.
We'll see. But he might be also too busy like trying to escape from the constricting limbs of the lilac. So we'll see. We'll see how he's doing.
Yeah, just bring your machete in there with you.
Yeah, exactly. Well, awesome. I can't wait to hear Mr. Lorre's thoughts on that. Hopefully he's still alive. We'll find out.
Welcome to the Poverty Row Studios on the other side of Hollywood, where the stars were dimmer and the red carpets dripped with blood. Together we will watch the best of the worst, movies known for their limited budgets, outlandish concepts, and questionable performances, but with enough haunted houses, zombies, ape men, and devil bats to keep you up at night. This is the Poverty Row Picture Show. And I dare you to sleep through these nightmares. Oh! Hello there. I am Peter Lorre, and I have but minutes to live. As you can hear, I am in a little bit of a pickle. You see, my fiendish friend, my botanical buddy, my platonic plant, my lilac, has turned on me. Oh, and it is currently squeezing me to death. But damn it all to hell if I do not continue reviewing these Poverty Row movies. If I am to go out, I can think of no better way than discussing the ape man whilst being munched on by a monster flower. Here we go. The ape man stars Bela Lugosi and was shot within a week at Monogram Studios.
The story is rather derivative. A scientist injects himself with spinal fluid from a gorilla, and what do you know, he turns into an ape himself. And of course, the cure lies in the spinal fluid of regular, all human beings. Thus begins the murder spree as Lugosi preys on the innocent with the help of his sidekick, an actual gorilla. Now, this gorilla was a costume and portrayed by veteran ape actor Emil Van Horn. Sunshine Sammy Morris, for what it's worth, of the East End Kids, also makes an appearance. Now, for the above, sounds like Monogram's previous film called The Ape with Boris Karloff. You would be on the money. Look, if you've got the gorilla costume, you might as well use it. And as Matthew and Vincent discuss, such pictures were popular at this time. I do not know anything about the 1990s, however. To venture a guess about that decade's interest in cinematic simians. Now, despite the predictable story, The Ape Man is not a terrible movie, all things considered. Mr. Lugosi, ever the professional, gives it his all. God bless that man. It is interesting to note that Lugosi's previous gig was playing the Frankenstein monster in Universal's Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman. However, Universal did not call him back for their next project, Son of Dracula. Ironic, eh? Well, the Universal brass shared little of the respect Monogram had for Lugosi. However hammy he may be in these movies, they are made that much more enjoyable with his presence. So seek out the Ape Man, and if I survive my present ordeal, I'd love to hear from you. Oh, that's the spot. That one didn't feel too bad. Oh! Nope. No, that one hurt. Here it is, listeners. I faced the deep, dark depths of the lilac's maw. And before I get eaten, we'll see you next week for Sunshine Sammy Morris and those other East End kids in a 1943 movie called Ghosts on the Loose. So, coming up on the Poverty Row Picture Show is a 1943 movie called Ghosts on the Loose, starring Bela Lugosi and the Dead End Kids. Letterboxd likes to share maybe like the tagline of the film. And I love this tagline. It says, "You'll yell with glee when these happy-go-lucky hooligans invade the shivery domain of the Man of a Thousand Horrors. It's chilarious."
That's a good word.
So check out Ghosts on the Loose and join Peter Lorre.
How do you I'm surprised we haven't really talked too much about the Abbott and Costello meet blah 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 fill in the blanks movies. I'm guessing we'll maybe bring some of them into the podcast at some point, but I'm curious about your thoughts.
Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein is one of the funniest movies ever made.
Yeah.
Arguably, Great. Like that's a common no contest argument there. It's hilarious.
Yeah. Or chillarious. One might say.
One might say. The other ones I've seen, Abbott and Costello Meet the Mummy, is so tired in its presentation. It's the last film they made as a duo. Mm. And they seem tired. The jokes are tired. The mummies are tired. Abbott and Costello Meet Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde is fun. Boris Karloff plays Dr. Jekyll in that. And then there's Abbott and Costello Meet the Invisible Man, which is also fun. But they're just, you know, they're worthwhile for the gags. But something about Meet Frankenstein is just, it's just like a complete movie. Mm-hmm. In ways that it's more than just gags. So I that's my 2-minute review of those movies.
Yeah. I think the Frankenstein one is the only one that I saw like a long time ago when I was a kid. And maybe there's one where they meet the Wolfman also, right?
That's in that one.
Okay.
Yeah. So that plot is they run across Larry Talbot, played by Lon Chaney Jr.
And of course, he's like, I got to find a cure for my lycanthropy. And they're like, okay, buddy, every man turns into a wolf at the full moon. And he's like, no, you don't understand. I'm really a wolf.
I vaguely remember that, I think, from a long time ago.
Yeah, so then they go find Dr. Frankenstein, and Dracula shows up. And yeah, it's hilarity ensues. Chilarity ensues.
Yeah, chilarity. Well, I'm sorry to lead us on that tangent, but I hope we bring one of those movies to the podcast at some point.
Absolutely. Yeah, they're great.
Welcome to the Poverty Row Studios on the other side of Hollywood, where the stars were dimmer and the red carpets dripped with blood. Together, we will watch the best of the worst movies known for their limited budgets, outlandish concepts, and questionable performances. But with enough haunted houses, zombies, ape men, and devil bats to keep you up at night, this is the Poverty Row Picture Show, and I dare you to sleep through these nightmares. Hello there. I am Peter Lorre, coming to you from inside the belly of my beloved yet admittedly bloodthirsty lilac plant. Yes, I have been swallowed by the monster, but fret not, as I have been consumed limb by broken limb, I managed to grab a hold of a sharp and pointed tooth. It broke off in my hand, and now, deep within the digestive tract of the lilac, I wield it as a sword and will soon be free of my captor's stomach. Ah! But I better act quick, lest I be liquefied by these acidic juices. Yes, I am free. Yes, take that, you infernal beast, back to the hell from whence you came. Now, on with the show. This week's movie is called Ghosts on the Loose. It is a tired 1943 outing with the East End kids running amok in a haunted house with Bela Lugosi playing a gangster and Nazi agent out to get them. And while the synopsis promises chilarity, the film is anything but. Clocking in at 64 minutes, much of the film is comprised of antics fit for a first grader, but hardly worthy of any of the talents involved. Mr. Lugosi doesn't even show up until halfway through. Now, it is interesting to see the great Ava Gardner in an early role, but it is as thankless as anything else. You're much better off viewing the similar, but actually hilarious, Spooks Run Wild. All right. Well, next time we will cover another zombie picture called Revenge of the Zombies, starring John Carradine. And until then, I'll need to clean up this disgusting mess. Yuck! Perhaps Matthew might be so kind as to lend a hand, but fat chance, knowing what care he has shown me until now, fighting for my life and an area. How are you, Peter? Do you need a hand, Peter? Perhaps a spade and shovel, Peter. Curse you, Matthew. Curse you. Curse you.
How's Peter Lorre doing?
He's alive.
God, still?
Hey, whoa. What's this beef? Does he have to come live with me for a little bit?
That might be a good idea, actually, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, before I make any promises,
I'm sorry, Peter. I didn't mean it.
You know, it could be a Patreon perk. You can sponsor Peter Lorre and like let him crash at your house.
But it has to be in a dank cellar, and you have to like lock him up and feed him fish heads. Those are the requirements.
Well, you know, he escaped the lilac. He was swallowed. And then he cut himself out.
All right. Well, I'm glad he's okay. I'm glad he's still alive. That's good. I take it
back.
Yeah,
I don't think he's happy with you though.
No, I'm sure he's not. Yeah. That's fair. It's only going to get worse. That's all right. So it goes.
Well, we'll see what happens. Tonight he's talking about another Poverty Row picture show movie called Revenge of the Zombies. Dead men can't die, but live to follow a madman's will. Cool.
I'm intrigued.
Yeah, John Carradine. He's going to be doing some crazy mad doctor things, I think. Oh, there are Nazis involved.
Oh, man. In 43? Wow, timely. Not surprising.
When Dr. Von Alterman's wife, Lila, dies mysteriously at his spooky mansion, her relations suspect murder. They also suspect the doctor is turning her into a zombie to join the army of living dead he hopes to devote to the Nazi cause. However, Lila, though dead, has developed a will of her own.
Man, I'm pretty intrigued by this movie. It reminds me of Shockwaves, which is also about zombie Nazis that played at the Trilon a couple weeks ago, maybe like a month ago at this point.
That's right.
Yeah. So zombie Nazis, apparently, a recurring theme throughout film history.
Yeah, who knew? There is a rich cinematic tradition of zombie Nazis.
Oh, wow. I cannot wait to hear Peter Lorre hold forth on this topic.
Let's give it to him.
Welcome to the Poverty Row Studios on the other side of Hollywood, where the stars were dimmer and the red carpets dripped with blood. Together, we will watch the best of the worst. Movies known for their limited budgets, outlandish concepts, and questionable performances, but with enough haunted houses, zombies, ape men, and devil bats to keep you up at night. This is the Poverty Row Picture Show, and I dare you to sleep through these nightmares. Greetings, ghouls and gals, monsters and madmen. My name is Peter Lorre, and I am back, you dirty, rotten scoundrels. Oh, you thought you had heard the last of me? You thought the puny Petunia could finish me? You thought I would be the excrement of a horticultural kaiju? Well, allow me to defy the odds. Once more, I return to review monster movies for Camp Kaiju, and with no help from that rat bastard Matthew Cole Levine. Sure, he goes to the fishermen's docks each and every morning to gather the delectable fish heads, but at what price to my dignity? When I needed him most, he was not there. This, dear listeners, is unforgivable, and I will have my day. You hear me, world? I will have my day. But until that day, when Matthew knows the cost of his negligence, I will continue to review monster movies of the Poverty Row Studios of Classic Hollywood. This week, we feature a zombie thriller from Monogram Pictures, 1943's Revenge of the Zombies, starring John Carradine as a Nazi scientist hell-bent on creating a zombie army to crush the Allies. The story bears a strong resemblance to previous films featured on the Poverty Row Picture Show, The Mad Monster, George Zucco creating a werewolf army, and King of the Zombies, the latter also featuring African-American actor Mantan Moreland. In Revenge, Moreland plays the same comedic relief, albeit less incorporated into the overall plot, but no less the saving grace of this film. Overall, however, Revenge of the Zombies plays like a reprint of King of the Zombies, but with a sense of been there, done that. Nevertheless, the picture has some wicked moments of camp and visual thrills. Rare elements indeed in these movies of the Poverty Row. For that reason, I would recommend Revenge of the Zombies. Perhaps a Mantan Moreland double feature is in store with King of the Zombies playing first. Yes, this is shaping up to be quite the movie night. If anyone out there wishes to have me over, I will bring the popcorn. I will also never leave, especially if I shuffle off to the bathroom and happen to open the wrong door and discover a guest bedroom with a fur mattress and throw pillows and a sultry silk count and no potted plants. Oh, yes. Well, until then, we will discuss our next film on the Poverty Row Picture Show, a little film called Voodoo Man. Yes, it stars the Unholy Three, Carradine, Zuko, and Bela Lugosi.
Drop of blood feels the freezing paralysis of fear, almost stopping your heart as Edgar Allan Poe unfolds his tales of terror. You will meet the master of the mansion, who loved and protected his wife with the strength of a supernatural love, even beyond life itself.
I am in command here. You will do as I say. I shall take what I desire. Your body and your soul if I demand it.
For another. Help! Help!
Then you'll enjoy the Black Cat's sardonically humorous tale. It all started at the Vintner's Convention, where the lover of wine met the professional wine taster and introduced him to his wife, a darling who delighted in dalliance.
What kind of a man are you anyway? Make love to my wife and doesn't even talk to me.
You're insane.
That may be, but very clever.
Help! Help! Help!
In this monstrous mausoleum of the living, you will witness fury far worse than a woman scorned. The fury of a dead woman's jealousy.
Spy at large, an invisible man.
It's amazing. Oh, you will be of great help to us.
Who is this terrifying phantom commando? What is his amazing mission? See The Invisible Agent, suggested by H.G. Wells' Invisible Man, starring Ilona Massey and John Hall, with Peter Lorre, Sir Cedric Hardwicke, J. Edward Bromberg, Albert Bassermann, in the most amazing story of our times.
Stop! Steady now. Don't let him get away.
Achoo! Gesunter. Who is there?
How did you know I was going to England?
I didn't, but...
So the trap was all set, eh?
Oh, Frank, how can you talk like that?
Oh! But what's this? It's full of hooks, sir. Oh, they're tearing into me!
come closer. I have another story to tell you. Astounding, incredible. The fabulous tale of Demetrius, an evil genius whose crimes baffled the continent for 20 years. Will-o'-the-Wisp, whose face the police had never even seen. But Demetrius hid behind many masks. An obscure peasant one day, banker the next. Man? No, a devil. Without heart or soul or conscience. I knew him only too well. But Demetrius...
A little surprised, Peterson?
Demetrius, utterly without scruples, completely immoral, but fascinating.
I feared him, yet I loved him.
As far as I know, no government ever caught Demetrius.
And I knew I hated him enough to kill him.
Fine apartment. I'll get them for you.
We want money.
What do you have to give me in exchange?
Silence, Demetrius. It's very valuable.
Place your hands behind your head. You too, Bernard.
But Demetrius...
Turn around.
You certainly cannot expect to get away with this.
I can do anything.
Anything in Mina's mailbox?
Actually, yeah. We do have a little note here from Kaiju Nick. Thank you for writing in, Kaiju Nick. He says, "Dear Camp Kaiju, so there I was enjoying my Saturday night kaiju movie, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea from 1954, and who do I see but Camp Kaiju's own undead co-host, Peter Lorre? Seeing him reminded me of you, so I had to write in to say hello and commend Mr. Lorre's work in this Disney classic. Best wishes... Thank you, Kaiju Nick. Always a pleasure to see Mr. Lorre unexpectedly. And to see him on Camp Kaiju as well, or hear him anyway.
Yeah, honestly, Kaiju Nick, Mr. Lorre's very happy about that email. I had to show him what email is, but once he got the hang of it, he loved it. I'm sure he'll have something to say about that.
Did he even remember acting in that movie, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea? Like, oh, this doesn't ring a bell.
I say I don't remember him being in 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
He plays Kirk Douglas's like little buddy, his like right hand man.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Lorre's pretty understated in the role.
Okay,
I mean it's a really bombastic film, and Kirk Douglas just consumes screen presence. but Lorre's there, solid, doing his job. Yeah, always likable. I'll pass that on to Mr. Lorre. And he's going to talk about a little film from 1944 called Voodoo Man. It stars John Carradine, Bela Lugosi, and George Zucco. And this movie, I love reading these letterboxed synopses. So apparently the tagline for Voodoo Man is, "His lust for voodooism spells D-O-O-M. Yeah, the movie is about a mad doctor and his helpers who lure girls to his lab for brain work to help his wife.
What does brain work mean?
What does any of that mean?
Right.
I don't know.
To help his wife. Help his wife with what?
Good question.
We'll find out.
Huh, I'm a little scared. And how does voodoo fit into all that as well?
And is it his lust that spells doom? Like, how does that work?
I guess we'll have to listen and find out.
We
Welcome to the Poverty Row Studios on the other side of Hollywood, where the stars were dimmer and the red carpets dripped with blood. Together we will watch the best of the worst, movies known for their limited budgets, outlandish concepts, and questionable performances, but with enough haunted houses, zombies, ape men, and devil bats to keep you up at night. This is the Poverty Row Picture Show, and I dare you to sleep through these nightmares. I am Peter Lorre, and yes, I was in 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, and the Nautilus was not the only dreamboat in the production. Kirk Douglas, am I right? I'll swear by his tattoo. Yes, well, that's more than I can say for Matthew Cole Levine, leaving me for dead in this rotten apartment. Well, before I digress, thank you, Kaiju Nick, for your electronic correspondence.
And thank you, Peter Lorre, for willingly giving me the microphone for this segment.
Wait, what? Is that you, Bela? Bela Lugosi? Well, Matthew just let anyone in these days.
I have ways of getting through locked doors, and considering tonight's review is about my 1944 film, Voodoo Man, I am afraid I must do the honors.
Fine by me, pal. I mean, I still need to pack, I need to comb my hair, find a new place to hang my hat. Listeners, I will return next week for all new thrills when we discuss a non-Bela Lugosi movie called The Monster Maker.
And I will hang about and tell you all what the Voodoo Man's lust is all about.
Yeah, good luck with all that.
Children of the podcast, I bid you welcome. Voodoo Man marks my 8th and final picture with Monogram Studios. You have seen me yuck it up with the East Side Kids. You have seen me play gangsters and mad scientists. You have seen me wrestle zombies and devil bats and play the best ape man this side of the jungle. And now, to end my contract with Monogram, I don a necromancer's robe as John Carradine and George Zuko abduct young women for my nefarious plan to transfer their life forces into the corpse of my beautiful bride. Now, Voodoo Man has been called a better film than most I made in the 1940s. Indeed, after my time with Monogram, the choice roles were hard to come by. Even Universal stopped calling. Oh, sure, there was Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein in 1948, but that was about it until the Ed Wood pictures and my own slow descent into the fangs of death in 1956. So I thank you and Peter Lorre for being kind to me on the Poverty Row Picture Show. Even if the movies themselves were less than praiseworthy, I did what I could with what I had. But always better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. And so, I bid you adieu, and until we meet again, remember, I was once in a movie called Bela Lugosi Meets a Brooklyn Gorilla.
So stupid.
And Peter Lorre, Matt, did you even notice he moved out?
You know, it's been so quiet and peaceful here. That explains it. That must be why.
Yeah. Well, now I can't sleep at night. Cause I got some hoodlum moving in to my basement down here. It's Peter Lorre.
Oh man, there must be a high-pitched German muttering down there all the time now.
Ada's asking me what is going on. I can only keep Lorre from her for so long.
Oh, that's terrifying.
You gave him my address.
I did no such thing. I might have given him a general direction, but you know. Some landmarks, possibly. I didn't think he was even going to survive all the way over there.
Well, he did. And now I have to find accommodations for someone else in my house. Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. I'll offer you some tips to like make it a little bit easier. Maybe I'll give him like a parting gift, you know, since he's not in my place anymore. But yeah, good luck. That's all I can say.
I brought this on myself, but you know, we'll see. We'll make it work. We'll make it work. All right. He's going to talk to us about a 1944 movie called The Monster Maker.
Oh, that's a good title.
Welcome to the Poverty Row Studios on the other side of Hollywood, where the stars were dimmer and the red carpets dripped with blood. Together we will watch the best of the worst, movies known for their limited budgets, outlandish concepts, and questionable performances, but with enough haunted houses, zombies, ape men, and devil bats to keep you up at night. This is the Poverty Row Picture Show, and I dare you to sleep through these nightmares. Greetings, ghouls and gals, and happy October. 'Tis the gravest season of all. And thanks to Bela Lugosi for covering me last week. That man can really vamp on the mic. But now I return to continue the Poverty Row Picture Show. Coming to you now from all new digs. That's right, I have left the unfriendly confines of Matthew's dirty, rotten, stinking, lousy, two-bit, flea-infested excuse for a home. And now I find myself in the basement dwellings of Vincent's own abode. What do we have here? Yes, this is good. A full liquor cabinet and a color television set. Well, I am sure that Vincent will not mind if I make myself comfy. We haven't exactly established the house rules, but, what the heck. Now, what movie are we reviewing tonight? Ah, yes, 1944's The Monster Maker. This devilish B-movie concerns a mad scientist played by J. Carroll Nash, who injects his would-be adversaries with the serum of Acromegaly. This is the disease of the Elephant Man, Rondo Hanton, and that scientist from Universal's Tarantula. In reality, it is a rare disorder that causes the enlargement of the face, arms, and legs. Certainly no laughing matter, and its use as a monstrous plot point in this film and others is morally dubious, even for the films of the Poverty Row. However, how does the Monster Maker stack up against others of its ilk? Well, J. Carroll Nash brings a certain Oscar-padded resume to the film, but he can only do so much as the one-note doctor. Then, would you believe there's even a killer gorilla in this one? Yes, I did not see that one coming either. What do you know, the big ape is more of a curious cameo than even a subplot. The whole film is meandering, confusing, and paced so slowly you may find yourself checking the time. Well, that's it for now, and I thank you for listening and for all the support. I think next time we will discuss my fellow horror actor, that man with the acromegaly, Rondo Hatton, in a little film called The Brute Man. Yes, well, acromegaly does factor again as a sinister storyline, but does the Brute Man out disfigure the Monster Maker? Stay tuned to find out, and raise a glass until then to this autumnal season of Monsters and Madmen.
But another friend of the pod is Mr. Peter Lorre, and he's going to cover a 1946 Poverty Row film called The Brute Man. And as Letterboxd says, it is about a facially disfigured and mentally unhinged man who wreaks his revenge on those he blames for his condition. That actually kind of sounds like the Phantom of the Opera. But
yeah.
I guess nothing is new in horror films. But I'll let Mr. Laurie take that one away.
Welcome to the Poverty Row Studios on the other side of Hollywood, where the stars were dimmer and the red carpets dripped with blood. Together we will watch the best of the worst. All movies known for their limited budgets, their outlandish concepts, and questionable performances. But with enough haunted houses, zombies, ape men, and devil bats to keep you up at night. This is the Poverty Row Picture Show, and I dare you to sleep through these nightmares. Open here I flung the shutter, when with many a flirt and flutter, in there stepped a stately raven of the saintly days of yore. Not the least obeisance made he, not a minute stopped or stayed he, but with mien of lord or lady, perched above my chamber door, perched upon a bust of Pallas, just above my chamber door, perched and sat and nothing more. Oh, you startled me, listeners. Oh, well, will you excuse me while I close my Edgar Allan Poe's copy of The Raven? Yes, it is not so bizarre a thing for a man to do alone in the basement of his home. Sorry, Vincent's home. No, dear listeners. I swear this is just a book, a little velvet cover, with a little bookmark but I digress. I would like to tell you that I was in the movie called The Raven for Roger Corman. Yes, dear listeners, so it all makes sense now. Well, okay, here we go. Tonight on the Poverty Row Picture Show, we will discuss the 1944 movie The Brute Man, starring Rondo Hatton as the Creeper. Yes, the Creeper is a back-breaking psychomaniac from a series of Universal horror chillers in the 40s. Now, the actor, Rondo Hatton, was a man who suffered from acromegaly in real life. This is the glandular disorder that enlarges the face and the limbs. And for better or worse, Hatton puts his mean mug to work for Hollywood. At Universal, his Creeper character was featured in The Pearl of Death, House of Horrors, and The Brute Man. This latter picture would prove Hatton's swan song. Sadly, the actor died from his acromegaly 6 months before the release of the film itself. Fittingly, the movie, The Brute Man, treats the Creeper with a newfound sense of sympathy. I mean, his crimes, as heinous as they are, you can't help but feel for the guy. He's just a serial murderer who's just misunderstood. Lastly, it should be noted that the film was produced by Universal Studios and sold to the Poverty Row Company, PRC, for distribution. At this time in 1944, Universal was on the verge of a merge with International Pictures, so they were kind of dumping all their B-movies off on the smaller studios in favor of more, quote, prestige productions. Well, be that as it may, next time we will get back to scraping the bottom of the bee barrel with Return of the Ape Man, starring Bela Lugosi and John Carradine. Oh my goodness, listeners, what is this outside my window? It is a winged creature of the night. Oh my goodness, it is a raven! A raven tapping at my window!
Thank you.
I'm afraid you lost your way.
Turn around! Go back!
I'm sorry to be so mysterious, but I have no choice.
Look, I don't want you to tell me anything that's none of my business, but anything you're involved in is my business.
Please don't ask me anymore.
I think you're wrong.
Wrong why?
My dear Marlowe, I agree with you. There's but one penalty for treachery. Slit her throat and be done with it. But the young man, after all, he's the son of the owner of the Hitchings land. A millionaire. He may be worth a lot of money to us. Alive.
You touch me, and I'll cut your heart out.
You killed a man there.
I didn't. No.
And stuffed his brother in a wicker basket, Mr. Carson.
I didn't go to kill him. He was hiding in back of the stall.
As the scientist who discovered that the human brain can survive bodily destruction, can continue to function as a dynamo of living thought, generating a mental power greater than the science of man, Gene Evans, as his assistant, sharing the burden of a terrifying knowledge with ever-increasing fear and hatred.
Step back!
Mr. Donovan intends to dominate the international financial scene. And a fatal accident will occur to all who happen to stand in his way.
Steve Brody is the reporter who probed too deeply into the beyond and received the full impact of its deadliest forces.
Yoakum's death was no accident. Donovan engineered it.
And the same thing could happen to us. Donovan could kill us the same way he killed Yoakum.
That's right. And it's too dangerous to wait any longer.
Frank!
Surprised? Thanks to Dr. Patrick Corey, Donovan's brain will live, thrive, and continue to grow far beyond the body of Dr. Corey. Is already able to exist in any body, anywhere it will. Knowing this, you now know too much.
Nancy Davis, as the woman who was compelled to submit to the brain's satanic vibrations of evil.
How's Peter doing? Sorry if I beat you to the punch there.
No, that's okay. Peter, you know, he's not here tonight. He ran out to get something for a Halloween party coming up. I don't know what he's got cooking. Maybe it wouldn't agree with me anyways. But when he comes back, he is going to talk about 1944's Return of the Ape Man, a Poverty Row picture starring Bela Lugosi and John Carradine. And our Letterboxd synopsis for this one reads, "The discovery of a perfectly preserved caveman prompts a mad scientist to attempt a daring brain transplant." Right there, cavemen, mad scientists, and brain transplants. How can you go wrong? And an ape man? Who knows? They're throwing it all in there.
And Bela Lugosi? It's everything you need. That's amazing.
It's everything you need.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Scientifically valid, I'm sure. I can only guess. Well, awesome. I can't wait to hear more about that from Peter. Thank you, Peter, as always. Hope you're doing okay.
Welcome to the Poverty Row Studios on the other side of Hollywood. Yes, where the stars were dimmer and the red carpets dripped with blood. Together we will watch the best of the worst, movies known for their limited budgets, outlandish concepts, and questionable performances. But with enough haunted houses, zombies, ape men, and devil bats to keep you up at night, this is the Poverty Row Picture Show, and I dare you to sleep through these nightmares. And what a nightmare my life has become. The fish heads have disappeared. Vincent does not keep them in the house. Oh my goodness, I hate to say this, but I might be missing that rat bastard known as Matthew Levine. Don't panic, Peter. Let's see, what does Vincent have in here? Let me see. Oh yes, what is this? Pizza rolls. Alrighty, well, when in Rome, let me just pop them into this here microwave oven. 6 rolls, 1 minute and 15 seconds. Oh, my heart, it is only you. Friends, this is my new animal companion, the Raven. Who taps on my window and demands I recite the words to its favorite poem. Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered weak and weary over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping as of someone gently rapping at my chamber door. Tis some visitor, I muttered, tapping at my chamber door. Only this and nothing more. There it is, Raven friend. You only get one stanza an episode. Now I scratched your little flea-bitten back, and now you must help me review my own bit of art. Return of the Ape Man. Yes, a 1944 Bela Lugosi film from Monogram Pictures. Now, this movie, believe it or not, is not a sequel to Lugosi's earlier film, The Ape Man, in which he plays a wayward scientist who inadvertently turns himself into a gorilla. No, this picture is way more serious. Yes, it is about a mad scientist who uncovers a caveman and a block of ice. After the prehistoric man is thawed, Lugosi takes the brain of his assistant, played by John Carradine, and places it in the caveman. Yes, now things really start to rock as Lugosi bids the caveman do his nefarious bidding. Perhaps because of the ludicrous concept, Return of the Ape Man absolutely works as a bit of camp thrills. Yes, the camp is off the charts with this one, and it moves briskly through its 60-minute runtime. Not a comedy, mind you. No, just a serious movie about the caveman with the brain of a scientist. What could be better? Now, it is not often that I give the old stamp of glory to a picture on this here show, but old Peter Lorre here, he's gonna do it. Next time on the show, we will discuss another 1944 film called The Girl Who Dared. Do ye press play on this bad mamma jamma? Oh, yes, well, if you will excuse me, listeners, my pizza rolls are ready. Let's see what this is all about. Ow, 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 hot, hot, hot.
But Peter Lorre, he was at the Halloween party. He was busting a move. He got a hold of some sort of jack-o'-lantern alcohol pumpkin thingamajig that he was drinking all night. I still haven't seen him. That was 2 weeks ago. He had to disappear for a little bit. But it was great. It was great fun. Wish he could have been there.
Yeah, I wish I could have too. It's hard to imagine Peter Lorre cutting a rug, but that must have been something.
He got down with all the monsters that night.
Man, it was just like a universal reunion at your house, I bet.
I had my VCR TV here. I had it set up in the kitchen, a little corner, like RIP to VHS corner.
Cool.
And people could just, the idea was people could play whatever tapes were available.
Nice.
At their leisure. We ended up, I put in Young Frankenstein to start the night. And then it was really funny because me and Gary and some others, you go get a beer in the fridge and then you find yourself just watching Young Frankenstein for 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's a good choice. Young Frankenstein's awesome.
Yeah.
Whenever that's on like TV or whatever, like you can't pull yourself away from it, you know?
Yeah.
That's cool. What else did other people play on VHS that night?
It's actually a friend of mine wanted to play The Thing, the 1951 Thing.
Oh, nice.
But then it wasn't working because the tape was locked. If you recall the tapes, they'd have like a little lock button mechanism on the side.
Yeah, kind of forgot about that till right now.
Yeah, so we had to fiddle with that and then just pivoted and put in Bride of Frankenstein.
Oh, Bride of Frankenstein, one of my favorites. That's a great choice.
Yeah.
Cool. Did you have any games or activities or anything that night?
Yes. Eyes the Phantom of the Opera hosted a night of fate and madness. So I concocted some games, three rounds of games, like a dance of doom, I called it, where everyone had to dance. And I called out people who kept moving after I stopped the music. Until I whittled them down to three. And then the three of them had to complete the lyrics to the Monster Mash the best of their ability.
That's amazing. I would be terrible at that.
And then the final two, it was like a relay race. I have like a little toy heart that I had placed in a hidden box and they had to find the Phantom's heart and bring it back to me.
Oh man, that's awesome. You're really good at party planning. That's creative. I love that.
Thank you. It was very silly. I led each round with a quote from the 1925 movie.
Cool.
Including the one you mentioned in our episode. Like a toad, I secrete the venom. Something, something, something.
Yeah. I was trying to remember what it was. It rings a bell. I don't remember the rest.
When I said that, there was an audible, visceral reaction from the partygoers.
I love it. It's 100 years old and it still holds up.
Yeah. They're like, what in the what?
That's the correct response, I would say. That probably sounded way cooler in that character's head before he said it out loud, you know, in a silent movie or whatever. But it's such a weird, weird choice for dialogue.
Back on track. The Girl Who Dared from 1944. Our letterboxed synopsis reads, a group of people are invited to a party at a creepy mansion where legend has it a ghost appears once a year. And the tagline of the film is, your blood will run cold. It's got those chills and thrills. Chills and thrills.
Nice.
The Girl Who Dared.
Sounds good. Kind of sounds like The House on Haunted Hill a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. We'll see. Can't wait to watch that and hear Peter Lorre's take.
Yeah, if you can find him and like if he's not still on a bender, you know?
Well, that's always the catch, isn't it? I don't know how you lived with the guy for a year.
Oh, man, I'm glad he's not here anymore. Like, I'm, you know, good riddance. I wash my hands of him.
Yeah, man, I didn't know you held grudges like this, but.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, the next time I see Peter, it is not going to go well. I'll just say that.
Yikes.
Welcome to the Poverty Row Studios on the other side of Hollywood, where the stars were dimmer and the red carpets dripped with blood. Together we will watch the best of the worst. Movies known for their limited budgets, outlandish concepts, and questionable performances, but with enough haunted houses, zombies, ape men, and devil bats to keep you up at night. Yes, this is the Poverty Row Picture Show. And I dare you to sleep through these nightmares. Oh, my aching pirate's booty. What a couple of weeks it has been. Friends,
I am sorely, sorely, deeply sorry for my behavior at Vincent's Halloween party. Yes, I do not even remember leaving, but I do remember waking up on this beach. Yes, the crashing waves were a cold and crude wake-up call. And as I sat there holding my troublesome temples in my hands, my costume clinging to my perfectly sculpted body, a shadow appeared over me. I looked up into the beaming sun and saw reflected in the sun the raven circling up above. It called to me, demanding the continuance of the poem. Well, I have never been one to disappoint an audience, so there, on the pebbles, I began the words. Ah, distinctly I remember it was in the bleak December, and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost upon the floor. Eagerly I wished the morrow. Vainly I had sought to borrow from my books surcease of sorrow. Sorrow for the lost Lenore, for the rare and radiant maiden whom the angels name Lenore, nameless here forevermore. And the silken, sad, uncertain rustling of each purple curtain thrilled me, filled me with fantastic terrors never felt before, so that now, to still the beating of my heart, I stood repeating, 'tis some visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door, some late visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door, this it is and nothing more. Presently my soul grew stronger, hesitating then no longer. Sir, I said, or madam, truly your forgiveness I implore, but the fact is I was napping, and so gently you came rapping, and so faintly you came tapping, tapping at my chamber door that I scarce was sure I heard you. Here I opened wide the door. Darkness there and nothing more. Deep into that darkness peering, long I stood there wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming dreams no mortal ever dared to dream before. But the silence was unbroken, and the stillness gave no token, and the only word there spoken was the whispered word, Lenore. This I whispered, and an echo murmured back the word, Lenore. Merely this, and nothing more. Back into the chamber turning, all my soul within me burning. Soon again I heard a tapping somewhat louder than before. Surely, I said, surely that this is something at my window lattice. Let me see then what thereat is, and this mystery explore. Let my heart be still a moment, and this mystery explore. 'Tis the wind and nothing more. And then I woke up. And my raven companion led me back to my basement dwelling in Vincent's home. And there, waiting for me, was my life's work. A box of Poverty Row video cassettes. And lying on top, Republic's 1944 picture, The Girl Who Dared. This film is a typical old dark house whodunit. But at a brisk 56 minutes, it is enjoyable enough. Yes, the action begins with a party of socialites who have gathered at a remote seaside home for a ghost hunt. We're out on the beach, amidst the crashing waves. It's a pirate ship haunted by the spirit of a buccaneer. Now, sadly, this does not go anywhere, but there remains a mystery to be solved worthy of Scooby-Doo and the gang, So listeners, check out The Girl Who Dared for an easy, albeit slightly forgettable, little thriller. But next week, on the Poverty Row Picture Show, yes, we are talking Killer Brains. Yes, Killer Brains are on the loose in 1944's The Lady and the Monster.
Now, the Poverty Row Picture Show, Peter Lorre is back. He is in the next room. He's passed out. So, you know, guys, say what you want while he's asleep. But he will be talking about a 1944 movie called The Lady and the Monster, about a millionaire's brain that is preserved after his death by a scientist. And this brain becomes so powerful that it creates a telepathic monster. Like, the brain transfers its energy into a human being and runs amok.
Wow.
That sounds cool. That reminds me of Fiend Without a Face a little bit.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. Yeah. The real quick. This movie is an adaptation of a Kurt Siodmak novel called Donovan's Brain, which was adapted several times into films. But I just read Donovan's Brain and can't say enough about it as a pulpy horror piece of fiction. It's really effective.
Cool. Maybe we should do more like very brief book reviews on the podcast. That'd be kind of fun.
maybe a Patreon perk.
Yeah. Oh, I'm kind of excited about that now. There's a book that I bought recently called The Paleontologist that's like, you know, a paperback, you know, page turner sort of thriller. Definitely a monster story. So maybe I'll bring that to the pod next time.
All right. We can do a book club.
Welcome to the Poverty Row Studios on the other side of Hollywood. Yes, when the stars were dimmer and the red carpets dripped with blood. Together, we will watch the best of the worst. Movies known for their limited budgets, outlandish concepts, and questionable performances. But with enough haunted houses, zombies, ape men, and devil bats to keep you up at night, this is the Poverty Row Picture Show. And I dare you to sleep through these nightmares. And oh, what a waking nightmare my life has become. The mysterious and lovely raven that has been a tap, tap, tapping on my window has now laid claim to my bedroom. Like a harpy of the night, this raven has proven somewhat irresistible to my heart. It sounds a little strange, I understand, but the listeners, I may be falling for this raven. Hell, you would do too if you saw the way this bird shines with a certain primordial effervescence. But whoo-wee, she is a ravenous raven and demands that I continue the poetry that calls to her beating heart. Open here I flung the shutter, when with many a flirt and flutter, in there stepped a stately raven of the saintly days of yore. Not the least obeisance made he, not a minute stopped or stayed he, but with mien of lord or lady, perched upon my chamber door. Perched upon a bust of Pallas just above my chamber door, perched and sat and nothing more. Then this ebony bird, beguiling my sad fancy into smiling by the grave and stern decorum of the countenance I wore. Though thy crest be shorn and shaven thou, I said, art sure no craven, ghastly, grim, and ancient raven wandering from the nightly shore. Tell me what thy lordly name is on the night's Plutonian shore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Much I marveled this ungainly fowl to hear discourse so plainly, though it's answered little meaning, little relevancy bore, for we cannot help agreeing that no living human being ever yet was blessed with seeing bird above his chamber door. Bird or beast upon the sculptured bust upon his chamber door with such name as nevermore. But the raven, sitting lonely on the placid bust, spoke only that one word, as if his soul in that one word he did outpour. Nothing farther than he uttered, not a feather than he fluttered, till I scarcely more than muttered, other friends have flown before, on the morrow he will leave me as my hopes have flown before. Then the bird said, nevermore. Startled at the stillness broken by replies so aptly spoken, doubtless I said, what it utters Is it only stock in store caught from some unhappy master whom unmerciful disaster followed fast and followed faster till his songs one burden bore? Till the dirges of his hope that melancholy burden bore of never, nevermore. But the raven, still beguiling all my fancy into smiling, straight I wheeled a cushioned seat in front of bird and bust and door. Then upon the velvet sinking, I betook myself to linking fancy unto fancy, thinking that this ominous bird of yore, what this grim, ungainly, ghastly, gaunt, and ominous bird of yore meant in croaking nevermore. Now leave me, raven. Please, please, you must leave me to my reviews. Poverty Row movies must get out there to the listeners. Oh, how you torture me so, but I have a job to do. All right. Thank you. Okay, listeners, I am all yours now. And boy, do we have a brain teaser of a film this week. 1944's The Lady and the Monster from Republic Pictures. This movie is an adaptation of the Kurt Siodmak sci-fi novel Donovan's Brain, in which the disembodied cerebellum telepathically controls an unwitting scientist to do his nefarious bidding. The Lady and the Monster largely sticks to the source material, but adds a few cinematic flourishes. You know, a dance number here, film noir shadows there. It's really not a bad little chiller. With brutal performances from Eric von Stroheim and Richard Arlen. As for the brain, you could say it's got a lot of nerve in this picture. Oh, well, what do you know about Hun, my beautiful raven? You having a mental block.
Peter Lorre. He's been on a wild ride, guys. He has been, well, he's in a room next to me. He's been talking, I think, to a raven, some kind of bird is calling to him, and he is reciting the poem, The Raven. There's some weird things happening. I try not to ask. I let him do his thing.
Wait. Is the raven calling the raven to him?
To be determined.
I need to hear this.
I'm clear.
Maybe it's not Peter who's going mad, but Vincent.
Oh, don't put that on me. Maybe it's...
He's going stark raven mad. Right?
Oh, I like that.
What? What is this madness you speak of? Did Peter Lorre ever exist, or was it always me? I can't tell anymore.
So many plot twists in this episode.
Are you the you that's really you?
Well. Peter Lorre is going to talk about a 1944 picture called Crazy Nights, and our Letterboxd synopsis reads, three crack-brained clowns trapped in a haunted house with a runaway gorilla. Oh my god. Also known as Ghost Crazy, three goofballs run up against ghosts and a giant gorilla in a haunted house with Shemp Howard of the Three Stooges.
Oh, does it only have Shemp, or are the other three Stooges in it as well?
I think it's just Shemp.
Weird. Okay.
The good one.
That's the weirdest thing, Matt, you took from that synopsis?
Not the crack brain clowns.
Good point. I'm so used to these, like, you know, weird old kaiju movie, or not kaiju, but this monster movie synopses. It's like, yeah, that sounds about right. That's not surprising to me. Shemp Howard, what's going on here? That's where I'm at with monster movies these days.
You can only handle so much weird until it becomes normal.
Yeah, exactly.
That's also going on a tote bag.
Oh, I love it.
Welcome to the Poverty Row Studios on the other side of Hollywood. Yes, where the stars were dimmer and the red carpets they tripped with blood. Together we will watch the best of the worst
Movies known for their limited budgets, outlandish concepts, and questionable performances. But with enough haunted houses, ape men, devil bats, and zombies to keep you up at night, this is the Poverty Row Picture Show, and I dare you to sleep through these nightmares. It has been quite a doozy here, though I am dead. It appears I cannot entirely shuffle off the mortal coils that remind me of my humanity. Well, what would I do without my raven friend? Yes, my lovely lady friend. Oh, well, let me apologize that I have not watched Ghost Crazy, otherwise known as Crazy Nights with Shemp Howard. One of three of the Three Stooges. Well, looks like I will be saving this one for the new year. Ring-a-ding, baby. In my time, I have yet to finish The Raven. My friends, something might happen at the end of this. You just wait and see. This, I sat engaged in guessing, but no syllable expressing to the fowl whose fiery eyes now burned into my bosom's core. This and more I sat divining, with my head at ease reclining on the cushion's velvet lining that the lamplight gloated o'er. But whose velvet violet lining with the lamplight gloating o'er, she shall press, nevermore. Then methought the air grew denser, perfumed from an unseen censer swung by seraphim whose footfalls tinkled on the tufted floor. Wretch, I cried, thy God hath lent thee, by the angels he hath sent thee, respite and nepenthe from thy memories of Lenore. Quaff, oh, quaff this kind nepenthe and forget this lost Lenore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still, if bird or devil, whether tempter set or whether tempest tossed thee here ashore, desolate yet all undaunted on this desert land, enchanted on this home by horror haunted, tell me truly, I implore, is there balm in Gilead? Tell me, I implore, quoth the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still, if bird or devil, by that heaven that bends above us, by that God we both adore, tell this soul with sorrow laden if, within the distant Eden, it shall clasp a sainted maiden whom the angels name Lenore. Clasp a rare and radiant maiden whom the angels name Lenore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Be that word our sign of parting, bird or fiend, I shrieked, upstarting. Get thee back into the tempest and the night's plutonian shore. Leave no black plume as a token of that thy soul hath spoken. Leave my loneliness unbroken. Quit the bust above my door. Take thy beak from out my heart and take thy form from off my door. Quoth the raven, nevermore. And the raven, never flitting, still is sitting on the pallid bust of palace just above my chamber door. And her eyes have all the seeming of a demon's that is dreaming. And the lamplight door, her streaming, throws her shadow on the floor. And my soul from out that shadow that lies floating on the floor shall be lifted nevermore. Oh my golly gee willikers, friends, look at this blinding light. Oh, something's happening in the radiance of the beaming light of the raven. She is transforming into a long-haired beauty. Oh my goodness, it is Lenore, how long it has been. Oh, you were the raven the whole time. Oh my goodness, come here. Let me embrace you. Oh, let me kiss your sweet lips. Yes, it is your Peter Lorre. Yes,
Never mind my rotted corpse. I am still the strong, svelte, handsome actor you have always known. Oh, yes, Lenore. Well, what shall we do now? Yes, I agree. We should take a vacation from this podcast. We should go somewhere warm. But listeners, I will return in the new year, in 2026, the Poverty Row Picture Show, in Shim Powered. We will return.
True terror is the soft, cold caress of the raven's wing.
Ooh. Your hands are so cold.
A woman whose desires transcend reality. The mysterious powers of black magic, these you will explore.
Now, what is it you need? You got some dried blood or some bat in the house?
The raven will take you careening through the darkest of dangers into the ominous mystery of a master magician's evil castle.
Afraid, my dear?
I offer you a choice. The secret of your hand manipulations, or this against this.
Well, don't just stand there.
Do something.
I bet I never see him again. I bet I never see his lousy skin again. I bet I never share a bucket of fish heads with that guy again. I bet I never have to share. Thank goodness I never have to share my fish heads with that sorry sort again.